Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. Rangers of the Dork Forest, let me tell you that I am in a very cute little Gilmore Girlsy-like town in Oregon called Cannon Beach, because I guess a cannon washed up on the beach in 1870 or 18-whatever, and they named the town after it. But I am with fellow comedian. We're both doing a comedy festival here. It's Hari Kondabolu. Welcome back to the show 12 years later, or however long it's been.
Oh, Jackie, it's nice to be back.
It's even so great.
It's funny because,
kind of, by the way, yeah,
we're both in our hotels right now, so we're only we're across the street from each other. We just had coffee,
yes,
together in person, and we're now in our hotel rooms, a block apart, talking into our,
yes,
computers.
Right, because it's Andy was like, "Well, why don't you just have him over to your hotel room, and then you can both stare at your own computer?" I was like, that I've tried that. It's messy. It isn't fun. It doesn't make for good clips. And the audio is, we're both shouting into the internet. It's not, the audio isn't as good. So the quality is what I'm willing to give up. Good times just sitting next to Hari. But we'll go to breakfast after this. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go to breakfast. Yeah.
Yeah. So Hari Kondabolu, HARIKONDOBOLU. It's at Hari Kondabolu on all the
socials. K-O-N.
Wait.
KONDABOLU.
DA. Oh, yeah. I went DO. Oh. And yet there was, I'm not going to defend myself. I spelled it wrong, you guys. It'll be right in the notes. And it's hisname.com. It's at his name. So, Hari, that's what we're just going to call it. And then, yeah, and then he's a great comic. You get a chance to see him. You're actually coming to Milwaukee next, right? Is that right?
Yes, Laughing Tap in Milwaukee, March 20th to the 22nd, and then Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
There's a great venue in Baltimore called Creative Alliance that I love, that I've done a bunch of times, on April 3rd. And then, like, the biggest show in New York I've done in a minute. It's been a couple of years. You know, I've been,
yeah,
working out material, but I finally am, like, here's a new hour, March 29th at the Gramercy, which I'm so psyched about, just because it's like, okay, I've been doing all these new material events and trying to figure out, like, what the hour is going to look like.
Yeah.
And March 29th, I'm just going to, like, put it out there. So, sorry, May,
are you
May
29th,
record? Rather. May 29th at the Grand.
May 29th. And are you going to record?
I might.
Or are you just going to work on it?
For me, I might just record for me, just to see how it, you know, if it feels like a done hour or not. But, like, I think it's mainly going to be for the crowd. Yeah. Play to them.
Yeah. 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 That's, I'm trying to figure out where to do my new album and video this year, and because I love, as much as I love Acme, I was hoping to sort of mix it up as far as how it looks, right? Like the first one, we changed the curtain last time I filmed. It's not, I don't think it's enough. Anyway, it's still the same room, Jackie. Anyway, but I love the room so much. Anyway, so Hari, your dorkdom, I think it was Seattle the last time we talked, was the city of Seattle.
Yes. Yes.
Because you love it so.
I still love it. I still love it.
But you were raised in Queens. You were raised in New York City.
That's right.
So,
yeah, Queens, this time, born and it's raised. Gonna be proud New Yorker.
Okay, there you go. So, and yet, New York, not your dorkdom, which is fine. Sometimes we take for granted the things that we love so much. And but I like that you picked your, it's essentially going to be sports. It's going to be baseball and then basketball.
Yeah.
Because it used to be baseball and then it moved a little bit to basketball, but you still like baseball. And I don't know that many people who like sports. So, I mean, I don't dislike sports. I'm not a monster. It's like music for me. I just don't know anything about it. And so what
you don't know anything about music?
I know what I like. It's like art for me. It's like art. I know what I like. So, you know, I've been listening to a little Dochi, but that doesn't mean that I know who she is. I went to her Instagram. She seems like a very beautiful woman who clearly has a team who is making her even more beautiful because she's a fucking knockout. And you're like, what's happening here? You're like, well, several people poured her into a dress and into some tall shoes. And she's got the most gorgeous wig I've ever seen in my life on. And so she's good looking people, but whatevs. So, but much like that, all I know about baseball is like I never watched it as a kid, but my brothers used to bring me packs of baseball cards in an effort to be, because I'm the youngest. They would be like, yeah, here, you're cute. You're a child. Isn't this something you give to people? And so I have a baseball card collection of the Milwaukee Brewers mostly. So from the 70s, but that's all I've got. So, and I played Little League. Did you ever play baseball?
I was very bad at playing baseball, but I loved it very much. When I was in Little League, the same group of parents picked me every year, even though I batted like less than 100 every year. And it's because I made the other parents laugh. Because I was like the only like 10-year-old who could make jokes about like Iran-Contra and the 1970 New York Yankees. Like, I was always like really precocious and older. Like I preferred keeping score on the bench versus like actually playing, if I had to be really honest. But
you could have been the manager.
Yeah, I mean,
you were
like,
the manager of your Little League team.
Oh, I would have been a great assistant manager if they gave me a shot. Honestly, I would have preferred it. Even though we were paying for me to play, I would have paid to like been a coach, to be perfect. A bench coach is really what my position should have been.
What was your role?
My role was to play. I played deep outfield. Every player kid has to play at some point. You can't like leave a kid out because they're bad. So my job, was to meet the requirements. I had to play at some point. It didn't matter how they got me in, but I had to get in somehow. I was very bad. I did one thing in my Little League career that I'm proud of. One thing, and I will tell you this quickly. It was my third year of Little League. I batted zero. And I later got glasses, so that kind of explains some of that. I was bad, but zero. You know, I didn't put a ball in. I struck out every time I went up. Clearly, there was something going on.
Right.
So I got to first base one day. I don't know how. I probably got hit by the ball. Like, probably. I don't know how else I got to first. And
could have got walked.
Somehow, I ended up on second base. Could it? I would have swang. I just couldn't see it. So I either bet. I would just swang wildly, hoping. So I ended up on second base somehow, and all of us we were allowed to steal bases, but I was a fat kid, so the idea of stealing a base, nobody in the ballpark was worried about that. I wasn't worried about that; like it was not going to happen. But you were allowed to take walking lead, so you could take a little sure. bit of a lead. So if someone gets a hit, you're more likely to score. And I had to be careful not to get picked off, but to be perfectly honest, the pitcher wasn't really concerned about me. Like I wasn't an issue. And so I was taking a bigger and bigger lead, and no one's paying attention to me. Like I'm talking shit at second base. Nobody cares. Like I'm taking a bigger and bigger lead. No, again, nothing's happening. And finally, I wanted to test my limit because nobody was paying attention. So I kept taking a bigger and bigger lead, and then I kept walking, and I walked to third base. And it was like everybody woke up at the same time. Like they saw me on third, and it was like, what just happened? How is he on third? What just happened?
You literally stole that base.
I literally it was not even in the realm of possibility, and I just took it slowly, very slowly, right. Stole third base. I think about that at least once a month, about how that, the mechanics of that, like the fact that no, it's like the only time I felt good about feeling invisible was being right. on second base
right.
that one time.
Right. Yeah. Right, because it was very much you were invisible, and they underestimated you so badly that you could have picked up the base and put it in your mom's purse, and then they would have not even noticed. So it would have been more likely. Oh my God, that I was a terrible baseball player too. I was catcher, and I tried so hard, but it's actually a physically very grueling role.
Very demanding. Because
you have to crouch. Very demanding. You have to crouch with the monkey suit on, is what they always called it. And then you have to run and try to get the pop-ups, and you gotta stand in front of the base and try to catch the ball before somebody plows you over. And if you don't have the ball, they get to plow you over because you're just in the way. And I'm like, well, no, someone's going to throw the ball. Someone's going to throw the ball. They're like, and yet you don't have the ball. So you better get out of the way. I get to make a point. Anyway, so I like that I asked what your role was in baseball instead of what part did you play. Your position. Assignment? What is it called? Position. There we go. So was it like, were you right field or left field? Like, was it like that? Because I remember right field people made fun of the right field people because everybody is right-handed and only lefties hit it out into right field, I guess.
I was in deep right or deep left.
Okay.
I played pretty deep just because I figured if I played any too close to the infield, like the ball was going to get by me. So I would play pretty far back, but it would still get by me. And I would my big move was to throw the glove at the ball in a maneuver that has never worked.
Knock it out of the sky. Nobody's ever.
That's not going to happen. Like when the ball is like just like it's on the ground, right? And I'm just chasing after it and just hoping somehow right. I can stop it with the glove, since it's clearly going to be a home run, a ground ball home run. So,
wow. It, so this is you as a child playing Little League.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet you loved baseball. You loved it anyway. Did you love the accounting? Oh. Is that what you liked about it? Or did you like watching the game?
Both. I loved the stats. I loved the fact that you could track people's progress. You could see the history of the game is connected by statistics and numbers. And so you could always feel like a sense of like, this isn't quite true anymore. Maybe it wasn't true then, but like somebody hitting 40 homers in 92 and someone hitting 40 homers in 52, there's still something about that that tells you they were really good. And like, that's a mark. 40 homers is a mark, or 30 homers is a mark.
Okay.
And, hitting 300 means something regardless of era. Like if you're a 300 hitter, you're a damn good hitter. And there's something about that that made me feel historically connected to the past and the present by watching this game, like poring over books of stats, you know, as a 10-year-old, reading about the history of baseball, and, you know, especially during the 40s and Jackie Robinson's era. So I also felt this connection to like America and justice, and like baseball's the narrative of baseball fit very neatly into the narrative of America. And it made me feel a lot more connected to being American, like being like a, you know, a first generation
because
of this country.
Because it was merit-based, or?
No. That's funny.
Well, what, I mean, you know, the idea of America is that it's merit-based, right? That's the ideal, right? So what made you connect it through baseball? I know it's not. That, I'm an adult.
It was more that it has been present throughout so much of the history of America. Oh. And it had been such a big sport and a game that, you know, whether it was lacking integration, eventually having integration, it was the story of immigrants often playing baseball, and this is their way, you know, into acceptance. Like there was a lot of stories like that that felt familiar. It's less so now, you know, but there was definitely a time when baseball was a bigger deal. You know, it wasn't just a sport, it was the sport. And so I connected to
when
that
was
feeling
that?
Like this. Oh, I mean,
like historically, do you know when that? Yeah. What is that?
Oh, I mean, throughout 20s, 30s, 40s, because like football's once a week, right? And basketball was not a big sport for many years until probably what, like the 80s, it became like, you know, like Bird and Johnson, that's when it starts to become a big sport, like something that people are nationally following. Like for years, basketball games weren't even televised live. They were taped. Like baseball was every day. It was part of your day-to-day existence, right? Every night the game was on. It was, it kind of was, it went with your, there's 162 games in baseball in a season.
That's, and it's not in a, right. And there aren't that many games with, like football's,
17 football games, 82, and this is the regular season. Then there's, the playoffs adds another month of plus of games. So we're talking like, you know, we're talking 200 games over the, and that's basically a game a day. Like that's a lot of games.
Right.
You know, it's
so if you like baseball,
exhausting.
you could watch or listen to a baseball game every day for 200 days or 162 days.
And I did.
That's, and you did. Every day you would come home from school as a child and go, what's the baseball game on today?
Yes. Or do I, can I watch
it? Or because it was in the
if
summer.
If it's a late game, I'd listen to it on the radio.
Okay. What? You know, I don't think I think I knew that, but I don't think I ever sort of realized it, right? In the way that, so, and when did it start? Do you know when it started being so many games?
It was always a lot of games. I mean, from the history of baseball, it used to be 154 games. Before that, I think it was less regulated, but it's always been in the hundreds. Like, you know, baseball.
Just a boat ton. How can they?
Half the year.
Why did they think that was okay? Why did they think? Why did they think that was something?
Because there was nothing else to do, Jackie. There was nothing else to do. We're talking about the early part of the 20th century. This thing fills 3 to 4 hours of your day for relatively cheap. Like,
right, you can sit around and have a couple of beers and, yeah.
It was considered fast moving.
Wait, baseball?
Yes.
You know that, that it was a perfect game in baseball.
But...
Right, because isn't a perfect game in baseball, nobody hits anything? Like a no-hitter yeah. is a perfect game. Isn't that correct?
A perfect game means that you don't walk anybody and nobody, like, it's like nobody walks. No one's on base. It's 27 people up, 27 people out. A no-hitter is when no one gets a hit. So you could walk or you get hit by a ball. But, like, it's all statistical. Like people were obsessed in baseball with stats, and like a no hitter in any generation is an achievement. Like it's marked. It doesn't happen often. And a perfect game is like in this upper echelon of players who like achieved it. It's like less than 50, you know?
Is it okay? Less than 50. And we've been playing it for over 100 years, right? It's 2025. Yeah. So it started, I think, in the 1880s or something, right?
Something like that. That's right. Yeah.
And
it was after the Civil War, or it was like during the Civil War, and then like more the leagues really started to form after the Civil War. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, and then and so do you know, like early, like Ty Cobb, famously. In my head, famously, yeah. which got to be famous because I don't know anything about baseball, is that he's famously an amazing baseball player and a really crummy human being, like a racist
Very
piece
crummy.
Of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
a real fuck job. And so, but was he a hitter? Was he a pitcher? What was his jam?
He was.
What was Ty Cobb's
thing? Before Pete Rose, he had the most hits in Major League history. He was one of the best hitters. He had the most steals in baseball history. He had scored the most runs. Like before Babe Ruth, the game was Ty Cobb. And the game also okay. echoed Ty Cobb's style. Like Ty Cobb's style was very gritty. It was beating out a hit. It was slashing the ball. It was playing really aggressive, trying to take an extra base. It was this kind of what they call small ball. Like you move from base to base. That was Ty Cobb, right? Babe Ruth comes in okay. and it's a home run hitter's game. Like power becomes what the game is. And that's what adds a level of excitement to the game that was lacking before. So in his era, like
well, the game
they had a dead
changed.
Ball. The game changed. The ball changed. That was the biggest thing in the first era. The ball was a dead ball, meaning that you hit it. It didn't go as far. It was wound a certain way. The live ball era, they really tightened it. So when you hit it, it actually like sprung off the bat and would go farther. And so that was a major change. The idea that the ball actually would lead to offense. And so that's like Babe Ruth's era. Like that's when there's this live ball.
Quick question. Before did Babe Ruth hit homers with a dead ball?
Yes.
And then they were like, we would like other people to do this as well. So let's change the ball so that it bounces a little bit better or something.
I think there was a level of that because Babe Ruth wasn't a hitter initially. He was a pitcher who got to hit. And so that means he didn't hit every day. But when he did hit, he was hitting home runs and they moved him. They turned him into an outfielder because he was so good as a hitter that they thought that was a better use, even though he was one of the best left-handed pitchers of his era before he turned into a full-time hitter. But that was part of what spurred it. Like, there was power. People were excited by power.
Right, always. And but here's my next question is, why didn't – if he's playing every game, why doesn't he get to hit every game? Was there a rule where pitchers didn't get to bat?
Well, when he wasn't pitching, the idea is somebody else is pitching, so someone else is batting, right?
I see.
So they wanted him in as much as they possibly could because he was clearly like the best player there, and he had so much power. And so they moved to, he went from pitching to the outfield so he could hit every day. So, you know, the record was 29 home runs, which he set, and he just kept topping his own record. Every year he would just top his own record. He was that good.
So did he also, like, they were like, well, he's a great pitcher, but we want him to play more often. So I take it because pitching is sort of, it's harder on your arm and it's like, it's physically yeah. Probably the most challenging, except for catching. We don't know. Anyway, but it's like, did he both pitch and Like, if he wasn't pitching, did they stick him in the field or did they just stop him pitching?
No, it was they started sticking him in the field because he was too much
when
of a, he was a big asset. Yeah, I mean, there's a player right now named Shohei Ohtani who is hitting and pitching at a level that we haven't seen since Babe Ruth. Like, he actually is one of the Dodger guys, right? That's right. That's right. He's a star. As a pitcher, he's an absolute star, except he gets injured when he's pitching. And when he's hitting, like, he doesn't so much. So, you know, there's that risk of if this guy gets hurt in a way that affects his hitting, we're going to lose a pitcher and a hitter. But when both things are, you know, in sync, he's as good a pitcher as anybody else in Major League Baseball, and he's by far the best hitter.
Oh, really?
It's unbelievable.
I have a baseball hat. I have a Dodger baseball hat that's in Japanese, that says Dodgers in Japanese. Because he's awesome. And I don't like – baseball isn't my thing. It turns out baseball hats are. I enjoy a baseball hat. So I got that hat, and it's a Major League Baseball. It's a branded hat, but it is very much people comment on it because they're like, oh, you're a big fan of that guy. And that's why I know his name. Anyway. So Babe Ruth, so they changed the ball to that. And
yeah.
Does the game change again after? Wait, so in between Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth, it's because Ty Cobb played in like the 1910s to the 20s, right?
Yeah, more or less.
I don't know why I know that.
That's about right. That's about right. Yeah.
And then Babe Ruth played in the 30s and 40s, right? Mostly?
No.
Or 20s and 30s?
He played in, he played in Ty Cobb's era into his own era. So it would have been like late teens into the 30s. He retired in like 34, 30, something like that. I don't remember. Yeah.
Because baseball players can play for like 20 years as opposed to other, and yet they're playing 200 games a year. Is it because they're just standing around most of the time? And this is not, that sounds rude, but they're not, I mean, it is a slower game than basketball or football.
I think you could get away with being out of shape in baseball for quite a long time. You know, Babe Ruth was not in the best shape, but he was athletic enough and he had power. You know, there's tons of examples of like pudgy catchers or like people that don't seem like they're particularly athletic. John Kruk was a famous example in the 90s, but like they could hit a baseball and they ran fast enough and they did what they needed to do. Right. So,
If you could hit it hard enough, you had all day to get around the bases, I suppose.
That's right. And less so now, like you don't see that as much. You see like players that are really in incredible shape with technology that keeps them like, you know, it's too competitive to do that.
Okay. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, because the 50s is with like Willie Mays and that, mm-hmm. right? Like after Babe Ruth, who were the big? I think there's.
You Cal get into Ripken? Joe DiMaggio.
Is that the 60s? I don't know. Oh, Joe DiMaggio. That's it.
Joe DiMaggio. You get into Ted Williams. You know, because you're also you're there's a war in there too. So like that stops the game for a period of. 3 or 4 years where the game is being played, but not all the best players are there.
Okay. So people are still, they still want to see baseball, but everybody's in the army. All the men are.
Right.
And so a league of their own is created. And
correct. It was a fascinating era also, because you had players that you wouldn't have seen in any, there was a guy named Pete Gray, only had one arm. And he played baseball with one arm, and that happened during the years when like the stars were, you know, in when the stars were play were fighting. Yeah.
Right. So there was where did he play?
I think the Cleveland Browns.
East Coast? Okay.
The Cleveland Browns, they were a team. There were two teams in Cleveland, the Browns and the Indians. So I think he played for feel like it was the Browns. The Browns often did like, I guess what, I guess stunt casting. They often would have people that you wouldn't normally see Like, they had a little person once, Eddie Goodell. This is a famous story. And they signed him. His strike zone was so small because he was a little person that there was no way that the pitcher was going to get him out. He was going to walk every time because he was going to go over his head.
Right.
So, like, that they attempted that once. Like, the Browns were, I think the, I can't remember the name of the owner. I feel like, was it Bill Veeck? But they did a lot of, they were the number two team in Cleveland, which says a lot. And so they did what they had to do.
They were trying to gaming the system. They're trying to make the system more interesting.
Not the Cleveland Browns. Sorry. I got that. The St. Louis Browns. They were the second team in St. Louis. It was the Cardinals and the Browns.
Okay. Here's a tangential question. Who names their team the Browns? What's that all about? It's
I
said the Cincinnati Reds, and then there's wasn't the Reds the name of a team?
Reds is funny because during the communist scare and everything, they changed their name to the Red Stockings. Yeah, briefly, and then they went back to the Reds because that's insane.
Yeah, Red Stockings. That's not gonna strike fear into the hearts of anyone. Yeah. And the naming, it's sort of like comedy clubs. Why do they get to name their own baseball teams? It's so weird. Who's naming the teams, do you think? Do you think the town is naming them or the owners?
Nowadays, they've done things where they'll have fan votes and fan suggestions when a new team is created, but it's the owners. Like, they have branding people now, you know, like it's,
wait,
I mean, the Yankees used to be called the Highlanders. They were the New York Highlanders.
Were they Scottish? Did they wear kilts? What happened? I want them to play in kilts. No underwear. And I just want them to run around the bases. I'm entertaining myself. Anyway, so how many teams were there initially? Approximately? I mean, it doesn't have to be dead on, right? Because if there's 100 games going on, like now it's 200 games, but if there's only a dozen, because how many teams are there now?
Oh, God, I don't know, 26, 27, like 28, 40? Something like that. There's a lot. Okay. I mean, back then, the same teams were playing each other all the time. You know, it was much more common, and they were playing 100, you know, whatever it was, 154 at some point became standard before 162. And you know, there were fewer teams, fewer players. Initially, there wasn't a minor league system. So you had the National League and the American League. They were competing leagues that would play in the World Series. And eventually they joined forces and became the same league with two different sub-leagues.
Oh.
But they were actually competing leagues for a while.
Oh, sort of like professional wrestling where they were like, no, watch us. No, watch us.
That's right.
But they were geographically separate though, which is sort of, or would like the National League have a team in the same town as the American League?
Depending on the market, that could happen. Yeah. So like there was some of that. But it was like the National League and the AL. And while that was happening with the National League and the American League, there was another league that showed up sometime, I think, in the teens or 20s called the Federal League, which stole a lot of the best players briefly and was seen as a real threat to Major League Baseball because, you know, that's the thing. Baseball is a monopoly. It's really hard to form a league, and there's all these rules that allow baseball to really have the amount of control that it has because, like, the Federal League tried to join, and they actually had a degree of, like they were biting into the market pretty good, and then they folded at some point and then kind of got absorbed into the major leagues. But there were other leagues that were being created that were professional leagues as well.
That's so interesting that, like, because is it regulated? Back when we had a federal government, was it regulated at some point at that level? Or was it regulated by itself? Or, yeah.
Baseball has always gotten away. It's so much money. And because of its status in America historically, it's gotten away with like a lot of antitrust kind of things. Like it's not seen, like all these monopolies were broken up. Baseball was never seen in the same light as a monopoly, even though essentially that's what they were. There was not much competition. There was not going to be other leagues that were going to compete with it. And so what that also led them to do is like they could do whatever they wanted. They had their own set of rules and their own standards, right? They weren't going by like now, you know, players are paid what they're worth based on the economy of the day. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not, yeah. They're not arbitrary numbers. They're based on like how much money that the teams are making and what we think this person is valued based on the market. Back then, owners could pay players whatever they wanted, and salaries had a huge discrepancy because it's just an old white dude telling you what they think you're worth. And if you don't want to accept that, then you don't play, because they didn't have free agency. There wasn't somebody who could wait out a contract and sign with another team. You'd have a contract that would get renewed perpetually, you know, forever. It was called a reserve clause. And so, you know, it was a monopoly, you know,
yeah.
As a result, like players really were paid far under their value. Some eventually more than the average person, but there were no unions. You were not allowed to have a union. The attempts at unions were destroyed. And so baseball always had this kind of status where they were kind of above the law.
Is there a baseball union now?
Very powerful union. Yeah. Which people hate the union just because it leads to strikes. It leads to work stoppages. Oh, right. It leads to, yeah.
Yeah, and then they don't get to watch baseball. Right. So
and people get angry. It's like these billionaire owners and these millionaire players fighting it out, and I understand that, and there's truth to that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like if we're doing this capitalism thing, you got to side with the workers. You know, like if you've decided to go full on capitalism, it's like, "Hey, look, I'm not saying that these players are worth this much based on what we should be valuing as a society. Like what we should be valuing is teachers being paid significantly more. But in terms of what we do value based on dollars and cents, what we actually see, like we show what we value based on what we spend money on. This is what they're valued. They're valued millions upon millions of dollars. Like that's what their value in the market is. And that's something people...
I loved how you put it, which is just like it's billionaire owners fighting millionaire players. And you're just like, this is not a narrative that is compelling to me because nobody's living check to check here. But but it is like the billionaires should share with the millionaires because everyone wants to watch the millionaires. It's like it's sort of like the entertainment industry, which is, I guess, what baseball is. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
But people are like, well, I can't believe you are worth that amount of money. And you're like, except that, you know, you could say, well, why do you get $5,000 to do one show? You're like, well, because they're making $60,000.
That's right.
For me to make that show. So there has to be, like you said, if we're going to be doing capitalism, then you have to pay what the market will bear and what the market values, which is what that's the whole premise.
Well, it's also a matter of like, you know, when we talk about Hollywood stars being paid what they're paid, you know, you can't complain because then you have to be like, then why are people going to those movies? If you don't want people to make what they're making, don't watch movies. Like we value entertainment highly that that's the reason why people get paid what they get paid. And I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm just saying it is what it is. Like that's how this society works. And that's, there's a reason why, you know,
and that's how baseball works. Yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Sports. In
okay.
General.
So, so Pete Gray, is there a video of Pete Gray playing baseball? Is this during the 40s?
I think so. Yeah. Which I found him fascinating because hitting wise, I could imagine it just because, you know, you can swing a bat with one hand. It's the catching, like how do you catch a ball with one hand and throw it? Like the ability to he played the outfield.
To catch it with a glove. Okay. Yeah. So he's catching it with the glove and then what? Just throwing both of them up in the air, just catching the ball and then throwing the ball?
I can't figure that out. He must have figured out a system to like get the glove off fast enough to throw it. But like, it's pretty remarkable.
Kinda,
like,
he really can't. Right. It's going to hurt to catch it with your bare hand. So he's got to use the glove to catch the ball. He's using the glove.
Right. Right.
And, like, and then he's got to throw the glove off of him.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's a guy named Jim Abbott who's a famous baseball player in the 90s, and he had, one of his hands was missing, but he had rest of his arm. So what he was able to do is when he'd have to switch from his throwing arm to his catching hand, he was able to move the glove onto the stump and be able to throw with one hand. Like he was able to use the hand, the arm without the hand and keep the glove on it and then switch to the other hand very quickly. It was very impressive. But with Pete Gray, I'm like, he's only got one arm. How do you do it?
Jim Abbott, who did he play for?
He played for California Angels, now known as the Anaheim Angels, and he was a really good player. Like he ended his career pretty solid. He was like a star player for a couple of years. It wasn't that he was playing. He was good. That was the part that was him playing already is shocking to people, but he threw a no-hitter with the Yankees. Like he was a very good player.
So he was a pitcher.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean thing
he was
is
a decent hitter too, by the way.
Really? With just one arm. With one hand. Because he could only hold the thing with
And he would
that's
balance
amazing.
It. Like it was so incredible. Because he played for the University of Michigan. He could hit there too. He was a decent player all around. Like it's really sensational. But like baseball, sports in general have stories like that. But when you see something like that, it's incredible. And there's a lot of stories like that of people like overcoming the odds that you see in the history of baseball. And I've always found that very, fascinating. Along with, again, like I said before, like how it echoes the history of America. Like integration is such a big story. Like Jackie Robinson making the majors is a civil rights moment as much as it's a baseball moment. Like that spurred a nation on.
Right. You said that you watched that Ken Burns. The only Ken Burns documentaries I've seen are the National Park series and the Civil War series. but he did jazz, he did baseball. So did he concentrate on most of those characters? Is that
he made the game? Yeah, he made the game about characters, about and eras, like how baseball fit into the history of the time, and kind of the characters that drive the game. You know, whether they're off the wall characters that like only could fit in a game like baseball that involved like basically traveling entertainers. Or just like the inspirational figures that show up in the game, whether it's Jackie Robinson or a Curt Flood or Roberto Clemente, like there's all these figures that show up that like kind of, you're just stunned by,
Flood?
Oh, Curt Flood. It's kind of somewhat of a tragic story, but he was a player for the St. Louis Cardinals in the 60s and 70s, and he got traded to the Philadelphia Phillies, and he refused to play for them. He's like, he had his family in St. Louis. He had played in St. Louis for many years. It was his home. And the thing, this was during the era where you couldn't challenge it. Like, if they basically owned your rights. And so he went to the Supreme Court to fight it, that, like, this reserve clause is bullshit, and he mounted it to some degree along with the Marvin Miller, who's the head of the players union, as kind of a form of servitude, a form of slavery, because you weren't able to make choices in baseball. The comparison that was made by Marvin Miller was it was like going to plantation to plantation. Like you never actually got to choose where you got to go. So Curt Flood, like he basically cost himself a career by taking this, this case all the way to the Supreme Court and challenging the reserve clause. And he kind of took he was a star player, and he took the hit for it. He said something on the Ken Burns series, if I remember right, it was how he has no issue with the color God made his skin. He just wish he made it thicker. I think about that a lot.
Wow.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah. Was he a black man?
Yeah.
Kurt Flood?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he took the hit, and did he break that reserve system?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Him along with a bunch of other players, but it was Kurt Flood that really forced
the
issue.
Was the face of the, yeah.
Yeah, like he's the one that was like, he lost his career over it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, eventually you have to, anyone can say somebody has to stand up for it, but it's a real, that's amazing, is when someone actually goes, I've had enough. The other day I was at breakfast with a friend, and I was talking about stopping my, trying not to use Amazon anymore because I'm over it. Right. And I can do Amazon. I can even do Whole Foods, which is a bit of a hit for me because that's where I would always buy my meat. But and now I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of Amazon Prime. And I was talking to my friend Greg, and I go, yeah, I just want to finish Reacher before I cancel it. And he goes, hey, Rosa Parks. And and I just want to say this. I bet you Rosa Parks took it until she couldn't take it anymore. That's right. I would say. I would say that Rosa Parks sat in the back of the bus until finally one day she was like, there's so many seats at the front of the bus. Why? Just in the middle of the bus, just a little bit forward to the middle. Why am I trapped back? There's no room back there. I just have to sit down, and I'm too tired. So I guess I'll fight this fight. And maybe that's what it's going to have to take me with Amazon. We don't know. But what I say is I respect Kurt Flood for standing up for it. That's amazing.
I mean, these are the things in baseball that made me not just love the game, but become so infatuated with it, which honestly nowadays, like, baseball has lived off its Jackie Robinson credit for a really long time. Like every year they talk about Jackie Robinson, and at the same time, they don't talk like the other sports, you know. Obviously Kaepernick is the famous example in football, but basketball, every civil rights issue, they step up and they talk about it. There's a discussion, there's a protest, you know. Famously, a playoff game got stopped after, there was another police shooting, and then the Milwaukee Bucks decided that they weren't going to play a playoff game, and the other team agreed too. I mean, there's certain things that you don't see in other sports. You know, part of it, I think, with baseball is both a very white sport, but it's also a very Latino sport. So you have a lot of folks who are not from America. So you can't expect the same level of like, I'm going to take a stand here. Like, I just came to this country to play. Like, I have a lot at stake here.
Yeah.
And you have a bunch of
trying to send some cash back to Cuba. Yeah.
Right. And so you're you can't expect me to do anything, or I'm not aware of the issues, or I don't know it. And then you also have like a bunch of white players that lean conservative, that don't believe in like this a certain ideas of justice, or don't want to get involved. That's the bigger one. Like, I don't want to cause any trouble. And in basketball, even LeBron James speaks up. Like, the biggest stars speak up. Like, which wasn't the case in Michael Jordan's era, but in this era, like, people speak up. They're very vocal about issues. They care about the world that's happening around them. And for me, that's like what I loved about baseball growing up, was that kind of history, which you don't see with baseball right now. Because every year they talk about like integration, but you're not going to talk about police brutality. No one's going to. There was a guy named Bruce Maxwell that took a knee during the national anthem. He disappeared the next year, never played again. Like, baseball's not.
Baseball guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he played for the Oakland Athletics.
What was Roberto Clemente's thing? Am I getting that right?
Oh, Roberto Clemente. First of all, Roberto Clemente. The fact there isn't a biopic about him is kind of stunning, just because his life is so fascinating. Played for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was Puerto Rican. Unapologetically Puerto Rican. Unapologetically Latino. During an era where, like, you know, it almost felt like you had to be apologetic about what you were for the press. You know, like, he would speak Spanish in interviews. Like, he didn't wear a smile. He was always kind of seen as a little rough and grumpy. They called him Bobby Clemente or Bob Clemente. He hated it. He wanted to be called Roberto. Like, his name is Roberto. He wanted to be called Roberto. And he was an incredible player. And over time, as he just continued to hit and continued to produce and produce with a certain level of dignity, like, he was never ashamed of what he was and who he was, and would talk about, like, you know, the rights of the underclass, you know, his support for Martin Luther King. Like, he was always very vocal about that in Pittsburgh. And,
did he play in the 60s?
He played in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, the 60s and 70s. Primarily, I think the 70s, but I think maybe the tail end of the 60s, but really the 70s. And what he's famous for at the end, 3,000 hits is a giant mark in baseball. If you get that's like one of those things. If you make 3,000 hits, you're immediately seen as a certain level of star. Like, you're going to go to the Hall of Fame. That's a hard thing to do, is to reach 3,000 hits. And so, on the last game of the season, he got his 3,000th hit. And over the winter, there was a earthquake in Nicaragua, and he had been coaching in Nicaragua, had a connection to Nicaragua. And he apparently, all the aid that was being sent and supplies that were being sent to Nicaragua were being taken by gangs and you know, corruption had taken place.
Right.
So people who needed it weren't getting it. So he himself got himself a plane, filled it with supplies, and decided, I'm going to go to Nicaragua myself to make sure this goes where it needs to go. And the plane crashed. And they never found his body. They still have never found his body. And so that's how it, like, yeah. And so he's this figure that, like, is kind of mythical because of how he died, because of what he represented. And also in baseball, every time you get to that number 3,000, you're tied with Roberto Clemente. Like, immediately the
first
person.
Nobody else has done it. It's just. There's only a handful of people. Okay.
Only a handful of people have done it, but, like, the number 3,000, he ended exactly on 3,000. Like, the last game of his career, he hit 3,000. That's where it ended, and then he died. And so he's kind of this really incredible mythical figure who I wish got more attention because of his, like, his humanity. Like, he
right.
is such an incredible human being.
That's what I think I'm seeing in the pattern of what you love about it. Because the game is fun, right? People are hitting balls and catching balls and throwing balls and running bases, and it's baseball, and that's fun. But you like the characters and the fact that it's someone who's, you know, the examples you're seeing of the people, of sort of your favorite players, are these people who took that power and used it either for good, or we have yet to find someone that you've loved that they've used it for evil. But I'm not a huge conspiracy theory person, but that sounds like the CIA shot that plane down. Roberto Clemente is what it feels like. And there's no proof. And all I know is the bare bones that you just told me. But I will say this: Ron Funches does a very funny bit about how, if you don't believe in any conspiracies, he doesn't trust you. He's like, that means that you believe the government is on the up and up the whole time, all for everything. That actually doesn't make sense either. So, I mean, I'm not lizard people, but I do think that there are injustices that occur with people, because absolute power corrupts absolutely, and sometimes it's abused for bad guys. Anyway, so who are Roberto Clemente? That guy seems amazing. So I love that guy. Yeah.
That's an Oscar waiting to be won by somebody. Like, that's one. Like, that's
right. There's a Puerto Rican actor, Lin-Manuel Miranda, a musical.
Only thing is, Clemente was black, which makes it even more interesting. He was a black Puerto Rican.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you ever been to Puerto Rico? They're doing excellent work with pork chops. I fucking love Puerto Rican food.
briefly on a cruise ship, so it wasn't real. Like I saw a little bit of San Juan. Yeah.
I went essentially I was doing a Coast Guard gig. So we flew into San Juan and then we drove across and did a show there at a Coast Guard, and then we drove across to the other town and did a gig on the other town. It's raining. I don't know if you could hear. Hopefully not. Unless that'll be nice for Rangers. By the way, we're almost at an hour, but I just want everyone to know Hari Kondabolu, Kondabolu. It'll be in the notes. A great comic. It's at his name and HariKondabolu.com. And he is going to be in Milwaukee, and you're going to be in Baltimore, and you're going to be in New York, right? So you want to.
New York on May 29th.
There you go. That's the Gramercy, right off of that park. Is it by the Gramercy Park? Where
I really should know this, considering I'm born and raised in New York, but I don't know.
It's the only reason I know is
gig. I do everything in Brooklyn, so it's actually me doing something in Manhattan. So
right, so New York, New York, you guys, yeah. A town so great they named it twice. Who are your other? Was it in the 90s that they sort of shut down any sort of political or any social, not even political, just socio-political?
Yeah, it feels like you see less of it from the 80s, 90s, but that reflects America too, right? Like the 80s was a time of wealth and go, 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 as much as it was like Reaganomics and the rest of it, but like, the rich got richer, and so baseball and sports in general, like, you don't see that level of activism. And the same thing I think is true in the 90s. But, you know, there's a wave of activism that starts in the last decade that we've seen between, you know, all the stuff that Kaepernick did and things from the NBA.
Kaepernick
even hockey.
Is a football player who kneeled, right? Or
yes.
Who knelt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. And who started that movement. Yeah.
Right. And then the basketball players, was that the Milwaukee Bucks? When was that?
Milwaukee Bucks.
Because
was it during COVID? I can't remember. I think maybe it was right before COVID or during COVID. I actually don't remember the year. I think it was 20 or 21.
But it might have been during lockdown or, yeah.
It might have been. I'm trying to remember. Let me look at it. Bucks.
I wonder when they came up with their slogan, which is the greatest slogan in the world of sports, the Milwaukee Bucks. It's their logo is a deer, a male deer, I believe, antlered. And though I think that I don't know a lot about deer, but I think female deer also have antlers. But it's fear the deer. That's their slogan. And it is genuinely the funniest, silliest slogan I've ever heard in my life. I love fear the deer, because I do. When I drive at night in Wisconsin, I do fear the deer, because you're going to hit a deer. And that's not going to be good. What'd you find?
It was during 2020. It was during the lockdown. They protested and they didn't. They refused to play. I mean, it was... It's a hell of a thing to do, you know what I mean? Like it's there's so much money involved and
right.
so
Did
much
they
pressure
get,
and no, but
Did they
the NBA
fined?
Backed
Did they,
it.
No,
the NBA backed it.
That's
they
amazing.
They were in support of the decision, and that's another thing. I think the NBA does a good job of understanding the needs of their players and the needs of society. You know, it's a very black league, and so it's not like you have, because like historically, usually it's like. Very black league, very white management, and that has a conflict. And it seems like in basketball, especially with Adam Silver, who is the owner that took over after David Stern, who is the longtime longtime commissioner retired, he's been much more open to like social justice causes and kind of the needs of
the new
players and society at large. Yeah, over the last decade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's. See, and that is amazing. I remember the first time I learned that there were mostly white quarterbacks in football.
Yeah.
And having a black quarterback was kind of a big deal. And
it was seen as a thinking position.
Right. And so they were the thinking position and like this sort of leadership role, and they didn't want to give it to black players, I guess. And
they didn't think black players were capable. They didn't think that they had the tools to do it, which is absurd. It's football.
Right, right. Right. And the thinking position that you don't think that black players could play that role, that by definition is a racial decision. Would be racism. Yes. Yeah.
Same thing is true with managers. Managers and coaches in sports, like for years, like they you just saw very few black managers in baseball. That was one thing that Jackie Robinson, when he retired and would speak in public, sorry, he would say that he's happy to see so many players, like black players now, and it's such a change. But he's not going to be happy until he sees people like behind the lines who are like working behind the scenes. He's like, it doesn't matter until we see executives and coaches and managers who are black as well. And so that's something that baseball, it's gotten better. But like, you know, for years, it was kind of like, you know, white staff and then black players. And that has its own, you know, fucked up dynamic.
Right, right. That is crazy. Well, we didn't talk about basketball. I mean, you were like, I don't know if I have enough about baseball. But you had enough personalities to cover an hour, Hari.
It's weird. Enough Jackie, personalities, enough anecdotes. Talking, yeah. I was shocked. I was like, literally, like, man, I really know this stuff. Like, I was literally thinking that, like, I am shocked that I know as much as I do about this stuff and know it well, you know. And it is something that shaped me. It absolutely shaped me as a kid. Like, especially, you know, I think as Indian American and trying to find a sense of what American identity was, like, baseball very much gave me sports in general, but baseball specifically gave me this real like sense of I have ownership in this country. This belongs to me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it is inclusive to get to root for teams and to care about individuals and you know, math belongs to everybody, you guys. And that is why the accounting of baseball can be for everyone. You guys, yes. Hari Kondabolu, follow him on all the socials. Go watch him do stand-up comedy. And thank you so much for doing the show, Hari.
Oh, Jackie, you're the best. Let's have breakfast.
Let's have breakfast. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?